Brought to you by Bank of America Merrill Lynch, investing in local communities, economies, and a sustainable future. That's the power of global connections. Merrill Lynch, Pierce, Fenner & Smith, Incorporated. Member SIPC. Welcome to the Bloomberg Surveillance Podcast. I'm Tom Keene with David Gura. Daily, we bring you insight from the best in economics, finance, investment, and international relations. Find Bloomberg Surveillance on iTunes, SoundCloud, Bloomberg.com, and of course, on the Bloomberg. Jeffrey Sachs is with us. He's here in celebration of building the new American economy. And now we're going to talk about the big debate here right now. There we go, building the new American economy. Let's go to the single best chart right now. Jeff Sachs knows this chart. This is a decline in manufacturing in America, and this is adjusted for population. It's a little bit of an odd chart, but all you got to know is it was grim and we've stabilized. How do we get an America, thank you, Detroit guy, built Sachs tough? I mean, not some liberal, mamby-pamby kind of thing. How do we get tough about this and build a tough policy to boost trade and boost manufacturing?
Tom, that's a great chart, but that is not a chart of American manufacturing. That's a chart of manufacturing employment.
Correct.
That's different because manufacturing has increased, but employment has decreased mainly because of productivity. And that's really important. We're down to 8% of employment in manufacturing right now because we're a service economy. But what's wrong with manufacturing? Nothing except the fact that it's robots doing it, smart
systems. And the technological advance. So
this is a huge plus. These were a lot of jobs that
But then with the labor and the debate that we have with Brad DeLong at Berkeley, Danny Roderick at Harvard, Jeff Sachs at Columbia, what do you do about the labor that's been run over and voted for Senator Sanders, wrote the introduction to your book, or voted for President Trump? What do you do with those people who are, as John von Rienen said, angry, angry, angry?
First, you look at where did all of that income go? It went to the very, very, very top. This is the one thing we don't like to talk about in this country. The stock market is booming. The wealth is booming. And they want even more tax cuts right now. And that's big problem. So instead of some fairness in our system, Trump says we're going to blame the foreigners. So, of course, that's absurd. Or we're going to bring the jobs home when the jobs don't exist anymore. That's absurd. So this is a game. It's a game to take attention away from the fact that America is booming at the top. It's never been better in history.
Right. But playing devil's advocate, the problem is if, in certain cases, if you don't do those tax cuts, then businesses will move elsewhere. This was one of the things that Brexit under David Cameron or, you know, the UK was talking about all the time, is that if the world is not on a level playing field, then companies will move to Malaysia, they'll move to Singapore, and then the whole of the U.S. actually loses out.
We need a smarter tax system that collects more revenues, that is more fair, and that is investment friendly. That's not so hard to do because in smart countries, there's a reliance on more VAT collected that is then directed towards education, towards health, towards services, towards infrastructure. We undertax, we leave the rich with everything, and we don't therefore invest in the future. We don't help those that are left behind. So of course we need some tax reform, but not just to slash taxes. This is the mindlessness of our current situation.
All right, Jeffrey, can you point a politician that would be able to do that correctly in a way that it means that he or she would actually be electable?
If you got actually a group of people that really understand some basic public finance together, and I could rattle off quite a large list of names, and you had a serious discussion with the lobbyists out of the room about producing three things. Efficiency, that means growth orientation, fairness, and adequate revenues, it's not so hard to come up with a good strategy. But it requires getting the lobbyists, getting the billionaires, getting the greed out of the room and talking about a future for all Americans, not just a future for the handful of billionaires that own our Congress.
We've been talking through the morning with Jeffrey Sachs of Columbia University, building the new American economy. It is an important book around a theme that Jeff is known for, which is sustainability, which is more intelligent use of resources. What's great about this book for conservatives and for liberals is it checks in at a large 130 pages. So it is an intense, short read on a prescription to do something. Jeff Sachs, wonderful to have you with us. What's so unique about Sachs Economics is you don't whine, you don't complain. You say, here's the prescription to get America fixed. Is there anybody on the conservative side listening to Jeff Sachs?
Today, we see that several of the leading Republicans are saying we need a carbon tax because we need to move to a new energy system. So that's a pretty positive development. President Trump's call for infrastructure, that's a positive development. What I've been saying for years is to get that done, we have to have politics in a different way. That is a thinking politics, a longer term strategy making, even planning, a dirty word in America, but we need that because if we don't do that, we can have all the speeches in the world, but we're not going to get beyond our decrepit infrastructure. We're not going to get to a new energy system. So I do see that there is a strong middle ground. I'm not a partisan. I was very critical of Obama's stimulus, for example. We talked about it at the time. I said it's all short term. It's not going to deliver anything for the long term. It's going to build up debt. So this is not a partisan left, right, Keynesian, non-Keynesian. This is saying that if you want a better America, you have to invest in it. It's not magical thinking. You have to invest. You can't get it by yelling and screaming at foreigners. You can't get it by building walls. You can't have it by a new trade war. The way to a better America is investment, and that investment needs to be smart, meaning technological. It needs to be fair, meaning that everybody is benefited, and it needs to be sustainable, not going to 20th century energy, but to 21st century energy.
The concern with that is that it takes a long time, right? If you fix America your way, it could take 5-10 years.
That's exactly right.
Right? So it's a timeline, and often it's a timeline. It was a timeline with the euro, the problem that now the people are uprising. They're not happy with the way it's going, and so you need a quick fix. Otherwise, this will continue, forever.
That's exactly right. You know, there are no short-term gimmicks to a long-term better future. And our politicians are just, they're gimmicks. Most of them are useless, worse than useless, because they're just distractions from what we need to do. I would call it the national marshmallow test, the famous psychological test of asking a child, you take that marshmallow now, or if you wait a few minutes, you can have two. Well, our country doesn't pass the marshmallow test right now. We are so short-term that we've been reduced to governance by tweets. It's unbelievable, the failure of attention span now. But we have institutions like the National Academy of Sciences, the National Academy of Engineering, where if a president and Congress said to our lead engineers, who are the world's lead engineers, help us develop a real strategy for energy, a real strategy for fast rail, a real strategy for a national grid system for power transmission, we'd actually get somewhere. And by the way, I would remind every politician that the interstate highway system, which was one of the big infrastructure projects during my lifetime, started in 1955 with Eisenhower, and it concluded 30 years later with Jimmy Carter.
Years. But where that vision is critical to talk about. There's a classic 1993 article, Jeff, I can't believe it's 24 years ago, Peter Passel in the New York Times on Dr. Jeffrey Sachs, shock therapist.
Yes.
And it was about Russia. In there, you do what you do, which you go to a country that was a model for Russia. In that case, it was Poland.
Yes.
Where's the model for the United States of America right now?
By the way, the model for Poland that I put out in 1989 gave them 25 years of the most robust economic growth that they had in their modern history. When it came to Russia, unfortunately, Mr. Cheney in the White House, in the Defense Department in 1992 said, no, that was a terrible mistake that we live with till today.
Move it forward. Where's the model today?
The model today is to understand that we don't achieve growth in the United States because we don't invest. And we don't achieve fairness because we don't pay attention to fairness. We let greed rule by the powerful lobbies, Wall Street, military industrial complex, big oil, big health care. It's given us an incredibly unfair society. So what we need is an investment-led strategy. And the three words that I think are crucial are smart, meaning technological. Second is fair, meaning that we are aiming for a society that has lower inequality than we have. And third, that is sustainable, meaning we don't need the Dakota Access Pipeline and the Keystone Pipeline, because those are the energy systems of the 19th and 20th centuries. What we need is offshore wind in the Northeast. We need massive solar from the Mojave Desert. We need U.S.-Canada cooperation on hydroelectric power from Canada's vast, clean hydro resources. And if the engineers could be given just a little say, they could tell the American people a lot of very interesting things about why our infrastructure is collapsing and what we should do about it.
But this is not only a problem in the United States. This is a problem that's sweeping across our Western democracies. We're seeing with Brexit, we're seeing it in European fears. How did we get to this point? It can't only be a redistribution problem.
No, it is a problem of our democratic institutions being undermined by short-term lobbying. And I'm glad you said our Western societies, because China has invested successfully for 35 years to achieve very rapid economic development, not because it's unfair, but because it's been thinking ahead. And that's the big difference. So the countries that succeed, even in the West, and I will say that Scandinavian countries, for example, have done well, they routinely have 20 or 30 year scenarios, whereas the United States has none. And now we have a president that wants to govern by Twitter. And this is, of course, the kind of absurd illogical conclusion of this trend towards short-termism.
Jeff Sachs, thank you so much for coming in. Jeffrey Sachs is at Columbia University. Smart, Fair, and Sustainable. The title of the a really thoughtful monograph, Building the New American Economy. It is short, brief, and intense about where we need to go. It is a manifest, as he says, not just for liberals and conservatives, but for all wondering about American education and American business and the incentives to make for a better America, even for the people that listen to Bloomberg Surveillance. Brought to you by Bank of America, Merrill Lynch, dedicated to bringing our clients insights and solutions to meet the challenges of a transforming world. That's the power of global connections. Merrill Lynch, Pierce, Fenner & Smith, Incorporated, member SIPC. Let me get in one quick question here with Sir Martin. Francine, I want you to get over here with Sir Martin Sorrell and talk about Brexit and all the other important questions. Sir Martin, I just saw you on your phone. You're bidding for Tom Brady's jersey. Are you really?
The one that was stolen, you mean?
Yeah, the one that was stolen. You and David Rubenstein are like bidding each other to buy this, to put it in the Library of Congress,
How
right?
How do you know who he's bidding for?
David Rubenstein bids for everything American. Okay. Help me here with the Super Bowl, the ads. Are those ads still effective? I mean, does traditional TV bowl ads, do they still work?
Well sort of the death of television is exaggerated.
We have many guests that strongly agree with you.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at it on a worldwide basis, if you look at our own Group M forecasts around the world for television as a proportion of total spending, it still remains pretty constant around the 40% level worldwide. Obviously, internet continues to grow more rapidly and making incursions. If I look at where we distribute with our clients our $75 billion of media spend each year. The lead investment now is Google at around $5 billion. The second largest is in the Murdoch Empire, which is the only really truly global media investment, around $2.25 billion. And the third one would be Facebook at about $1.7 billion. So, yeah. And Facebook grew last year from 1 to 1.7. Google grew from about 4 to 5. So what you see is obviously internet investment, digital investment growing and continue to grow rapidly, increasing their market share. But linear TV, classical network television, is certainly there is some pressure. But the over-the-top opportunities, and you mentioned Super Bowl. I mean, we're involved in expanding the over-top television, what is called Game Pass for the NFL, around the world, and there's particularly interesting opportunities around the world for franchises such as the NFL in over-the-top. Formula One
right.
Is so, another example of that.
I'm an American. I don't know what Formula One is.
Explain it.
Intelligent NASCAR.
Oh, intelligent NASCAR. Good. Francine, jump in here.
Sir Martin always has a way of words. Sir Martin, look, talk to me. You know, let's have fun. Do you think that Donald Trump, the President Trump, will actually bring Mad Men back?
And what, in which way, Francine? Explain
going back to like 60 years. Is this the kind of, are we going back to the glory days of America where manufacturing is back and advertising and people have whiskeys at midday?
Well, I don't think advertising is ailing. Now, I mean, if I pick out advertising, I don't think it's ailing now. It's just a different type. And creativity has changed markedly from the days of Don Draper. Don Draper wouldn't recognize 75% of what WPP does in outside, let's call it, traditional creative, but the definition of creative, I mean, data analysts can be creative, even financial directors can be creative, yeah. Sometimes too creative, but it's a question of the definition of what the creative product is, and data and insight are increasingly the difference between now and the 60 years ago that you mentioned is that we're now starting by analyzing data to try and learn key insights that we then develop media plans for, and then creative from those media plans.
Will President Trump be good for business?
I think in the U.S., yes, certainly in the short term. I can't talk to the long term, but in the short to medium term, let's say the next 2 to 3 years, prior to the next election, there's a sort of, it seems to be, if he gets his way on infrastructure investments, or what he said, if he reduces taxes, if he brings back, repatriates profits, that's going to be stimulative in the U.S. economy. It'll create, in my view, a sort of Keynesian, we'll be back to where we were not 60 years ago, but a few years ago when we had boom and bust, or the threat of bust. And so we'll probably get a bit more inflation. There'll be an inflationary-led boom maybe going into the next election. Internationally, Francine, I don't know. I mean, what you gain on the swings in the UK, you may lose on the international.
Very quickly on the time, a short visit today, Sir Martin. What's your counsel to brand building for Jeff Bezos? He's firing on all cylinders. Amazon is beginning to brand, but how do they get to that next level? What is your counsel for brand Amazon?
Well, I just try and answer the question, Tom, in a different way. If you ask my favorite question, which, you know, what keeps you awake at night, or when you wake up in the morning, what worries you? If you ask clients that, or people that, media owners that, the answer that is almost always there is Amazon. So the Amazon brand has become extremely threatening, actually, in many senses, in many places. And people are sitting, I mean, Jeff Bezos controls Amazon. He's not controlled by quarterly earnings, by the focus on the short term. He can make the long-term bets. And if you look at things like the cloud, has a dominant position in the cloud, or a growingly dominant position. Ironically, his competitors have to buy capacity from him. So if you look at the areas in which, if you look at content, if you look at proportion of sales of various products, you know, you look at diapers, for example, the diaper category, which I'm particularly interested in at the moment. If you look at that, increasing dominance of those categories. So the Amazon brand, actually, I'm not sure he has to do too much, Tom.
Okay,
actually,
we're
out
of time.
Very strong brand.
The next time you come back, I want to talk to you about something you said in Davos about expense management and expense reduction as being the problem of corporate America.
Focus on the short term.
Sir Martin Sorrell with us. Too short today. Francine Lacroix in London. I'm Tom Keene in New York. This is Bloomberg. I picked up the book and I was like, okay, great. The Third Wave, An Entrepreneur's Vision. And then I opened it and it was absolutely brilliant. Steve Case just did one of the great unexpected triumphs of a year or so ago in The Third Wave. It is a hugely thought-provoking pre-Trump book. He joins us from an embattled Washington. They've flown in Steve Case to explain to the president how to efficiently tweet, I guess, is the thing. Steve, wonderful to speak to you. You essentially invented, with a good a group of people at AOL, our new method of communication. What do you think of the president tweeting policy and tweeting the discourse forward? Do you regret that you invented this?
No, obviously the internet's had a profound impact. When we started AOL here in the D.C. area now 32 years ago, only 3% of people were online. They're only online 1 hour a week. So we said we wanted to get America online, get the world online. Obviously, that's happened. I think there are a lot of benefits. At the same time, maybe you know, some of us spend too much time online. Maybe we spend too much time on email, for example. Maybe the president shouldn't be getting up in the morning and tweeting. I think I'm a little surprised by that. But at the same time, he clearly, part of the reason he is the president, he recognized the internet and social media was a way to reach a lot of people directly, and he did that quite creatively, but using Twitter and other kinds of things. So it's not a complete shock that he's still doing it. But I think in general, some of these policy issues are kind of complicated. They're nuanced. Some of the global issues are obviously there's some subtleties to it. And probably the diplomacy should happen more face-to-face or by phone, not by 140-character tweets.
Chapter 11 of your book, America Disrupted. And what people don't know is there's a flyover zone. We all get that, East Coast, West Coast. And you're associated with Washington and Silicon Valley and all that. You grew up in the ultimate flyover zone, which is Hawaii.
Right.
And you grew up like totally flyover. How do we get, whether it's Hawaii or Oklahoma, how do we get the rest of America re-engaged in our technological economy?
Well, I think that's a big issue. And thank you, by the way, for the kind comments about the book. Coincidentally, just yesterday, I finalized the revisions to it. We have the paperback version coming out in April, added a new chapter, including some of the lessons learned from the Trump election victory and some of the feedback I got on the book. We kind of expanded different chapters, added some new things. So it'd be interesting to get your views when it comes out in mid-April. But one of the key themes of the book, as you mentioned, what we call the rise of the rest. How do we make sure everybody everywhere has a shot at the American dream? Part of the Trump victory was that he tapped into a feeling from a lot of people in the middle of the country that they felt left behind by digitization. They felt left behind by globalization, and they were frustrated, and they were seeing innovations in places like Silicon Valley benefit a few but not benefit them, and they got mad, and so they were lashing out. That was part of what drove the Trump a victory. I think we need to be listening to that, and Silicon Valley needs to be listening to that. The data here is sort of sobering. Last year, if you added up all the states that President Trump won, I think it was 32, 33 states. In aggregate, all those states last year got just 15% of venture capital. California alone got 50%. So California alone got three times more venture capital last year than more than 30 states in the middle of the country. And that's important because startups create the jobs. It's not the small businesses, it's not the big businesses, it's the young high-growth startups that create the jobs both directly for their companies and more broadly in the communities in terms of the other jobs, whether it be construction workers or restaurants or what have you, that help service those communities. So if we're only investing in startups in a few places like California, New York, and Massachusetts, and not in places like Ohio or Michigan or Pennsylvania or Illinois or other places, we shouldn't be surprised that you're seeing the downside of technological innovation and job destruction, but you're not seeing that offset, at least in part, by job creation from startups in those cities. So we have to figure out how to get more capital to more entrepreneurs in more places so everybody really does feel like they have a real shot, and including a shot at the American dream.
Even if people listen, how do you address it? I mean, do we stop innovation? Do you stop artificial intelligence? When you look at the way that robots will take over our lives more and more, it will displace people, and you can't retrain a workforce in the time that it takes for robots to take our jobs.
Well, I'd say yes and no. I mean, it's worth remembering that 200 years ago, over 90% of us worked on farms. Now it's less than 2%. And 88% are not unemployed. They did get new skills because we created new industries. We created the Industrial Revolution. We created the Technology Revolution. We need to make sure this country creates the next revolution that can create some of the jobs that will offset some of the jobs that will be lost.
Right, but we also had a war in between.
We had many things in between, but we emerged from essentially, the way I remind people, particularly here in Washington, D.C., that 250 years ago, America itself was just a startup. It was just an idea, a pretty fragile idea. Now it's the leader of the free world because it has the leading economy. And that wasn't an accident. It was the innovators, the entrepreneurs, first in that agriculture revolution, then in the industrial revolution, and more recently, obviously, this technology revolution that led the way. And we went from being this tiny little fragile startup nation to having the leading economy and being the leader of the world. So how do we keep doing that? And how do we do that in a way that's more inclusive? That means that we have to be backing more entrepreneurs in more places and figure out how to get the capital, not just to the entrepreneurs in San Francisco and New York City and Boston, but also the entrepreneurs in Chicago and St. Louis and Madison and Detroit and Des Moines and New Orleans. All the entrepreneurs there are building great companies, but they struggle to raise the capital because most of the venture capital is just focusing on the coast. That has to change, and hopefully one of the side benefits of the election of Donald Trump is that will be a wake-up call.
Right. But Steve, I mean, again, how much evidence is there that there's a lot of people and entrepreneurs hungry for that? We hear that from banks. Right. But hear me out. We hear it from banks all the time. That bank CEO says, right, well, they say you need to lend. But actually, they don't know who to lend to. Right. Well, so it can't be only a problem that there's not enough money in venture capitalism going into some of these places.
No, it is a problem. I the last 3 years, I've traveled by bus through the United States, visited 26 cities, 6,000 miles, and met thousands of entrepreneurs. And there are great entrepreneurs building great companies in all the cities I've visited. Just last week, we at my firm, Revolution, announced an investment in a company in Chicago called Uptake. This company didn't exist 3 years ago, now has 700 employees, growing like crazy. You know, they have 55 data scientists. They're doing some interesting partnerships with big companies like Caterpillar and others to try to figure out ways to use kind of precise analytics to be predictive of what's going to happen in some of these industries. That's in Chicago. Most people think that kind of company with you know that many engineers and data scientists could only be in Silicon Valley, yeah. Only could be in Boston. No, it's in Chicago. And similarly, there's a company in Indianapolis called Exact Target that Salesforce bought a couple years ago for $3 billion. Under Armour is in Baltimore. They're worth something right. like $20 billion. So there are great companies all across the country, but the focus of the media and certainly the focus of the investors is only on the coast, and it has to change.
Jeff Immelt did a blurb for your book, and again, folks, it's a wonderful book, The Third Wave. Jeff Immelt is reindustrializing an industrial icon. Arguably, folks, Mr. Immelt was my CEO of the year 2 years ago. I'm sorry, Steve, you weren't it. And what Jeff's doing, to me, is almost a metaphor of what the entire country has to do. How do we take GE Jeff Immelt creative disruption down to a mid-sized or small-sized mom-and-pop company?
Well, I think Jeff is doing a great job turning around one of America's greatest companies, but it's a big company. It's kind of like an aircraft carrier. It's hard to turn around, and we worked together on a number of things. Actually, at the South by Southwest conference in a couple of months, I'm going to be doing a panel with Beth Comstock, the vice chair of there, who's done a lot of things around innovation. So I think GE is a good example. I talk about it, as you mentioned in the book, The Third Wave, that there are companies, even if they're got scale, that aren't just trying to play defense. They're trying to play offense. Yeah. They're trying to lean in their future, and they're trying to figure out ways to partner with lots of people outside of their companies, including, as you say, some small businesses. Right. I joined Jeff last year. They hosted a conference in Columbus, Ohio, brought together some of the growing mid-sized companies.
I did that. Did you see the number of bars as you went down to the conference center at the business school? Did you see the number of bars Ohio State has?
Yeah, they seem to have. Yeah, they're pretty good at a bunch of things, including they're good at football. They also seem to make sure
it was unreal.
There's beer for all. So it shows that the leadership Jeff and GE were playing, trying to support companies mostly in the middle of the country that were rapidly growing companies.
Steve, we run out of time. We'll talk about Ohio State bars next time. Steve Case, the book is The Third Wave, an Entrepreneur's Vision of the Future. Look for the new edition soon. Thanks for listening to the Bloomberg Surveillance Podcast. Subscribe and listen to interviews on iTunes, SoundCloud, or whichever podcast platform you prefer. I'm out on Twitter at Tom Keen. David Gura is at David Gura. Before the podcast, you can always catch us worldwide on Bloomberg Radio.
brought to you by Bank of America Merrill Lynch, dedicated to bringing our clients insights and solutions to meet the challenges of a transforming world. That's the power of global connections. Merrill Lynch, Pierce, Fenner & Smith, Incorporated, member SIPC.